Hi, I'm Shantae Snellgrove, and in today's purposeful conversation, I have to say I'm really excited because we're going to get to talk with Julie Jones about accessible travel. And I know Julie has been writing about it, and she's passionate about it for many years, but she also has some new exciting stuff to tell us. So I'm going to let Julie tell us about herself, and especially for those of you that are not familiar with her. Like I said, she has written for us over the years, but she also has some of her own things that she does that are pretty exciting. So with no further ado, Julie, go for it. Tell us a little bit about you.
Well, thank you so much for the introduction. It's so lovely to be a part of this. So I'm Julie Jones. I'm from Australia, which you can probably tell from my accent. And I have a son who is Brayden, who I also refer to as BJ in my blogs. And he's now 23 years old, lives with cerebral palsy, uses a wheelchair and really needs assistance with all his day-to-day living. So he's quite dependent when we travel. And I write at Have Wheelchair Will Travel, as well as some other publications, including yours. And I just love sharing our travel adventures with people. I've always expected that as a family we would travel, and when Brayden was diagnosed with cerebral palsy, that became a little trickier, and my focus in the beginning was very much around therapy. And I really sort of delved into this 5 days a week therapy and was very much like a mouse on a treadmill, and it just wasn't sustainable. And I think like many families in the beginning, it's all consuming. And although you don't give up on that therapy, you just realize that you need to have more of a balance. So travel for us is very much a balance, and it's been very good for Brayden and his sibling Amelia as a connecting point, and us as a family just to remember that we are parents, not just carers and therapists in, you know, the day-to-day role.
Well, I love that you say that, and I feel like I get to live a little bit through you vicariously, because you guys seem like you travel so much and so often. I get to see places and experience things, so it's kind of it's great just by watching your blog, which is Have Wheelchair Will Travel. But tell us also about your give us a little brief, what's your new thing that's really exciting that's happening?
New thing that's very exciting is the development of Australia's first disability specific travel magazine. So I know we sort of felt that.
I have to say that because I know that you've been doing this for a long time and that's what's been in your heart. I'm going to speak for you, but I mean, I'm pretty sure that's what's been in your heart and that you've wanted that for a very long time. So finally to have it come to be is kudos to you.
Oh, thank you so much. I think it's lovely to see something around accessible tourism in mainstream magazines. But the reality I realized after getting accessible tourism in mainstream magazines, it's one story in each issue. And you really can't explore in depth some of the issues that really do face people travelling with a disability. Some things just wouldn't make it across the mainstream editor's, editing checklist, I guess. So really excited to launch Travel Without Limits and really go in depth. What we really wanted was to have people with lived experience writing the story. So although I know a lot about travelling with cerebral palsy, travelling with a wheelchair, I really wanted families who are travelling with somebody with autism to be writing the stories, because we really want it to be authentic and to come from a place of people who really do know. So readers understand that their needs and challenges are understood by the people that are writing the stories.
And I didn't quite get, when I kind of was doing a little bit of research, how often will Travel Without Limits come out?
At the moment, it's biannual. But as always, I sort of always want more. But we'll see, because I guess we really want to make sure that we do have that wealth of stories from people with lived experience. And that's a matter of sourcing those kinds of stories from people that are willing to share them with our readers.
Right. Okay, great. Well, hey, it is a start, and I'm sure it will continue because, I'm very excited for you, and I'm excited that it's out there.
Thank you.
You've been blogging and writing for, I was trying to go back in our history books a little bit, but how long have you been blogging?
Be 6 years this December.
Wow.
So, it's been a while now. It seemed like such a small idea when it started, and it's grown and grown, and it's been a wonderful process of learning, I guess, of what people actually want to know and what their challenges are. It's really opened my eyes up to a vast, as I'm sure publishing your magazine has done for you, a vast array of needs out in the community, and you really realise how many of them are unmet. I think that's the big thing, that you realise that that unmet need causes people to feel isolated, and I think there's nothing worse than feeling isolated. And although we have the internet open to us all, I think there's a lot of noise, and it's really hard to cut through and actually find the connections with people who do have similar experiences with you.
Right. And that's one reason I feel the same way. And that's, we, for those listening, Julie and I are talking, I get to see her face, which is awesome, because I feel like I normally only email her back and forth over the years. And she has written for us, in the show notes underneath the podcast when this goes live, I will put some of the links of the different things that she shared with us. I was, like I said, I was looking back in our history books, and I think 2014, we actually featured you and talked about, our room ops that shared all kinds of stuff. So it was interesting. So I know you've been sharing with us a lot, and I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Shared with us. So the mission for the new magazine, it's going to be out biannual, and it's to help readers find, to understand travel based on various experiences from disability community.
Yes. So every issue will have tips and tricks. So sort of, we want it to be very much a resource for people. So not just something that has stories in it that you might, may or may not be interested in, but really good tips to make sure that, you know, if you're preparing your wheelchair for flying, what you need to know, or, you know, how to travel with somebody who has a vision impairment or is blind, the things that you can do to enhance their experience when they travel. So we want those, but then we also want stories from our readers. We had, in the current issue, we've got somebody who shared her story. She's actually a New Zealand reader, and she shared her story of how she travels, but she needs to travel with 4 support workers to make it happen. Wow. And I think that there's a lot of questions around traveling with support workers. How do you make it work? How do you negotiate, you know, the sort of pay when they're on, when they're off, that sort of thing. So I think her story really is one of my favourites, because despite many, many challenges, I mean, needing 4 support workers is quite extreme. She continues to travel and, you know, really enjoy it.
Wow. And so that's in that issue, so we can link to it. And the magazine is available online, so technically people can, do they have to subscribe to get it, or how do they know?
No, it's free for people to read online at the moment, so we would love to keep that happening over time. I guess it just depends on how we go with getting, you know, advertisers and all the boring logistical bits behind the scenes.
Oh, the fun! Come on! Yeah. Come on. Yes! It's free, but it's not free, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll put a link. I'll include it, and if you send me some images too, I'll put it underneath this and share.
Sure. Yep.
So what has been your favorite accessible trip to date? Can you share with us?
I think probably our first one to Disneyland. We've had some amazing trips, and even this year we've been to Fiji and we've been to New Zealand, and my son's got to do some things that I never thought he'd be able to do. We strapped him onto a quad bike and he had the most amazing off-road experience. So that was pretty phenomenal. But our first trip to Disneyland is really what started everything. It started the blog, it started my mission to sort of make accessible tourism more available, or all the information around it more available to people. And it was kind of a magical start because we won our first trip to Disneyland. So Walt Disney magic, I feel. So we entered a competition, which was through Borders bookstores, which have since closed in Australia. Right. I think they've closed in America as well. And you had to send in a creative entry of which Disney character you thought you were the most like and why. And so my daughter did a creative entry and we won our trip to Disneyland.
So and what character was she? No, I have to know that.
Oh, well, she picked that her dad was most like Buzz Lightyear.
Oh, really? Wow, that's awesome. So she wrote about him. Okay, I thought maybe she picked her, but that's neat. That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so it was kind of a magical start. And I think because when we got to Disneyland, it's probably the place where out of everywhere we've traveled, the understanding is the best, and the unspoken language between parents who have a child with a disability and the cast members, where they just do things. You don't have to explain it. You don't have to ask them for things. They kind of almost sort of know what you need before you know you need it. So I think for us, that was a pretty magical start to our journey.
And so you're saying that they did know everything, or they're more accessible. So what prompted you to like then say, you know, I want to do something to make travel more accessible? Is it just because they were so accommodating that you wanted other places to be as accommodating?
I think we had so much fear ahead of that trip. And when we were organizing it and planning it, I kept saying to my husband, we're not the first people that have ever traveled with a wheelchair. And there just wasn't the information out there, not the detailed information I wanted. There was sort of standard, you know, statements on websites, but not really the nitty gritty stuff that would give me the confidence to actually say, yes, this is going to work for us. But because I used to work in the travel industry, I researched it and I planned it and I phoned and I did whatever I had to do to make sure that I knew when we got there it was going to go quite smoothly. And I think the feeling of liberation and exhilaration of actually achieving it was so great that when we came back, I was sharing it with friends, but that didn't seem enough. It seemed like, well, there's a whole community out there that must also be looking for that information. And so we just started sharing that trip. And then we realized that my son's constantly on the go. He's not one for sitting still, and he's nonverbal and he's very social. So day outings and travel really fulfill his need for, you know, that connection with people. So it just sort of grew from there. And then we found that there was a whole community of people that were just, you know, ready to embrace the information.
That's great. What I was going to ask, one of my questions was also, I'm not sure if I'm in the right order, so forgive me if I'm not in the order that I sent you, but what changes have you seen over the years? Because I mean, I know with as long as I've been doing the magazine, I've seen tremendous change. I mean, I know it's not as much as we all want. We want more, but there has been a lot of change that has come along. So tell us, is that the same for you? Have you seen a lot?
I think tourism providers are definitely understanding a lot more of what they need to provide. And like you, I'd say I've seen huge changes. It's never as much as everyone wants, and it's never as fast as everyone wants. But I also think that a lot of the things that are being put in place, for example, I'm part of Sydney Festival's Access and Inclusion Committee, and they have tactile tours for performances. So if you're blind, you can go ahead of the performance and you can do a tactile tour where you get to touch the costumes and the props. And so then when you're getting the performance audio described, it has so much more meaning for the person with a disability. So nothing like that existed when my son was younger, but we also need the community to catch up and actually understand that those facilities are available. And that does take a little while for that information to sink in. So I think that there's physical access definitely has improved. I think America is actually ahead of the game with the Americans with Disability Act. And I think that has helped educate as well as make physical access better. But I think that the more things like sensory performances, having chill out zones at different events. So Sydney Festival might have a sensory performance, but not only will they have the sensory performance, but they'll have a teepee where kids can go and they'll have some sensory toys in their teepee that the kids can sort of just decompress with. So those sorts of things just weren't around. Auslan, I'm not sure what the American sign language is. In Australia, it's called Auslan, but, you know, sign language interpreted performances, things like that, I think are really, really fantastic additions to make everyone feel part of the community.
Right. And I know something that just happened in America, too. There was a big a community learned sign language so they could talk with a little girl. That was like a little story that went viral. But that's huge, you know, I mean, that the community is willing to start learning that kind of stuff. So, and accessible bathrooms. I mean, we're not where we want to be, but at least no more noise for change. So,
well, I remember the first time we came to the US, Tom Bradley Airport at LAX didn't have a standalone accessible bathroom, which meant that for my husband and I to assist my son, we either had to go into the men's or the women's restroom. And that was a really big deal, because to walk in there, you don't feel comfortable. People around you don't feel comfortable. But in Australia, we actually, and in the UK, we actually have something called changing places.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you've heard about it, but yes, changing places is a standalone restroom, but it also has a hoisted facility. So that's not just important for the, you know, somebody who has a child that might need changing. They have an adult-sized change bed in there as well that's height adjustable. But for mum or a dad who needs to use the restroom, who's in a wheelchair themselves, that needs to be able to self-transfer, a hoist makes a difference of whether they can go out for the day or not. So the US definitely needs that.
Yeah, well, they're working on it. They're not. I think you guys started it first over there, and they're following, but we're not up to speed as much. But it is happening. Little bits of, you know, so thank God, and the spoilers and all that kind of stuff. So I wanted to ask you, back to traveling, you know, what is I know you do this on your blog, because I catch it occasionally, about different things that people should pack and things like that. So what are some everyday items that savvy, accessible travelers like yourself and other people that write for you know that less savvy, accessible travelers don't?
Okay. So we always pack a wheelchair repair kit, which just has basics in it. So if we get somewhere, we know that we can fix something that's quite basic on the chair. We would also find out where a local repairer, particularly for somebody who's in a power wheelchair, it's important to know. Say you were traveling from the US to Australia and you get to Australia, something's wrong with your power wheelchair. How do you know how? So if you've already sort of worked that out when you are at home and ask your wheelchair manufacturer, then you're organized with that. We also pack some basics. So things like, when we just recently went to Fiji, we packed a strap for my son, because we anticipated things like the quad biking might be something we'd like to do. So we just had one of those luggage straps that would go around your big bag, for example, and click into place. So it's just a basic strap that was adjustable. And that was basically how he managed to go quad biking. We also took some non-slip matting, which we did another electric bike experience on an old sugarcane train track, and there was a bench seat at the back, but for him to sort of sit for an hour while we biked was quite a long time. So we took the strap, but we also had the non-slip matting to put under his bottom just to help him keep himself in place. Wow. So they'd be four things I might be up to now that I would say are good to pack. And just the other thing I would say is, there's so much controversy around the handling of wheelchairs. It's really good to put some kind of notification on the back of your wheelchair of how it operates.
Okay.
Baggage handlers are always on a tight time frame, and it really helps them. Particularly in the US, it's probably good to have it in Spanish and English, I would say, and just have that on very basic instructions so they know how to operate. They'll appreciate it, and you'll appreciate it more when your wheelchair comes back in one piece.
Yeah, no, that is great advice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Any travel apps you recommend for people to get that have accessible?
Not particularly. I think, I was reading this week about Google mapping coming with wheelchair accessibility. So, I mean, once those things start coming into different cities, that will certainly be, to know the most wheelchair accessible route to take, that would certainly be very helpful. But at the moment, I wouldn't say that there's anything out there that particularly helps.
Helps, okay. And let me see. Well, is there anything else that I didn't ask you that you wanted to share about?
I guess the one thing I would recommend, particularly for parents, if they're starting off new or somebody who's new to having a disability, my number one tip is start local. Make it easy for yourself. And actually, not only does it help you work out what equipment you need to take to make a holiday work for you or a vacation work for you, but it also helps you work out what makes a good vacation for you when you get to that destination. So for us, we might pay more. Say we're visiting San Francisco, we pay more and stay at Fisherman's Wharf, so we could walk out the door to restaurants and, you know, see things locally without getting in and out of our car. So we would pay more because we know for us that makes a big difference, just not having to transfer my son in and out of the car. So start local, work out what makes a good vacation for you, take everything that you need on that first trip, and then work out what you didn't use, and travel with your own equipment as much as you can.
Oh, that's great advice. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you was just also for another article we're doing about self-care. Is there something you do for self-care that wouldn't really be considered self-care?
Oh, I think probably to carve out some time. It's so hard to carve out time. And this year I've definitely struggled more. Last year I was much more successful, but I've really carved out time to go for a walk with a friend locally. And try and do that as often as possible. There's no guilt if I can't do it, but definitely try and do that to keep my physical well-being, but it also fulfills a bit of a social catch-up with somebody, being able to decompress by having a chat. But I can hear a whole lot of people out there saying it's so hard to actually do, and I agree it is, but it's almost like scheduling therapy, scheduling in doctor's appointments. And I, as I've got older, I guess I've started to put in more support. So we're very fortunate in Australia to have some quite good funding that's come available in the last couple of years. So my son now goes out with support workers on a weekend, and that gives my husband and I time to actually do something together, which is really nice. And I guess that's important, not just self-care, but partner care, making sure, and sibling care. So sometimes we'll do something that my son wouldn't like to do, but my daughter would like to do. My son's not one for lingering over a long lunch, for example. He wants to be on the go. My daughter quite likes it. So sometimes when he goes out with a support worker, we'll take her out, and my husband and I, my daughter, will have a long lunch together. So I think it's just really finding what will re-energize you. Sometimes for my birthday and Christmas, my parents always give me a facial voucher, and because it has an expiry date, it makes sure that I go and actually do take that time out and get my facial. Good. And I always come back feeling quite rejuvenated. So really depends what your time out is for you, I guess, but Definitely just try and find some time in a week.
Yeah, no, I know it's hard, but those are wonderful ideas. And I love how you do. Oh, I have two little questions that weren't really in my list, but I've always been curious about this, because it seems like you're traveling every weekend. I mean, I know on Have Wheelchair We'll Travel. Like, how does that work? Do you guys travel? Like, how often do you travel?
No, because my daughter's in her senior years in high school now, so we really have to stick to school vacation times, which has crimped our plans a little bit. But I guess as the website has grown, people have offered us opportunities, which has been lovely. And hotels sort of in the beginning, I think they were quite fearful of our feedback. But over time, they've realised that we really want to be positive and help them to make their properties more accessible and to give that information to our readers. So we do get some nice opportunities to travel. I'm heading to Anaheim on Saturday, actually.
Oh,
so
nice.
I'm very excited. I'm going to see a sneak peek of the new Star Wars land opening, I think, today or tomorrow in Anaheim, our time. So, so definitely good opportunities. But I think we've found that as our family has grown, that travel really is an integral part. It's always been, my parents took me traveling when I was younger. And my husband and I travelled. We always wanted it to be part of the plan, but for the first few years, we didn't know how it was going to fit into the plan. So I guess it's also just not giving up on the dream.
Yeah, and I think I commend you for that, because that's awesome. And it's, you know, you've done it. And I also like the Friday night drinks. I always feel like, okay, I didn't get to go anywhere, but I can see she's having something. So, Julie, you're fine. But although we're, you know, it's a whole different day, but.
I know. It's just sometimes nice if a topic's come up during the week, it's nice to be able to chat about it just in sort of that casual vibe, I guess, of, you know, share how your week's been, I share how my week's been, and wherever I go, I try and take a photo of a tropical drink.
I know. I think I love it. I'm like, oh my gosh, look at that destination. So I love it. No, I've enjoyed it. So, well, I can't thank you enough for being there over the years. I mean, you've supported the magazine. I appreciate it with the wonderful content you've given us, not just on travel, but also on recommendations for toys and things like that. I appreciate everything you've done. And I wish you, with the new magazine, much success. I hope that maybe the people will sponsor it and we'll get it out there more than twice a year.
And if any of your listeners have great travel stories that they would like to share, please, you know, I'd love to hear them, because, you know, the more variety from across the globe, I think the better.
Yeah, and I think so too. And the magazine is just over in Australia, but are they traveling everywhere? So stories will be good for
Yeah, the next issue, we've got some really fantastic, I'm just trying to think what's in the current issue, I can't even remember, but the next issue, we've got some fantastic international stories coming our way, so yeah, really exciting. Really? India, Morocco, some US-based stories as well, so.
Well, yeah. Congratulations, and thank you, for everything you've been doing over the years, because as another mother, I know it's not, you know, also trying to help other people out there. It's not easy. And I commend you. You have been doing and traveling and still raising a daughter and a son and holding your marriage together. Kudos.
Thank you so much. And thank you for allowing me to be a part of your family over there too. It's really been exciting to contribute to the magazine.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. And you've helped us. So thank you. So I thank you. We'll be in touch. Send me some pictures if you will, please.
I will.
Definitely the magazine and the links in that. And I will certainly share them.
Okay. No problem at all.
So I'm just going to sign off. I thank you so much for being here. Thank you all for listening. You can subscribe at parentingspecialneeds.org. You can also tune in on iTunes and rate and review this podcast. And we'll talk to you soon.